A while back, I came to the realization that the majority of churches have never sent a missionary. I don't have any stats, but this is just a guess from traveling around and speaking in so many churches across America. But I would guess that maybe 80 to 90% of churches have never sent a missionary. Now, that's a bit incongruous because all these churches that I go to love missions. They love missionaries. They have missions conferences. They have a missions budget. They send substantive amounts of money to the mission fields of the world. But yet they had never sent a missionary from their church. And I began to wonder about that. What was the case? Why was that the case? And so one of the things I did was I wrote this book, Senders, to address this issue of how you can identify, equip, and send and launch out missionaries from your church, thinking that this would scratch an itch. And I found out that I'd written the wrong book. Because not everybody wants this book, and not every church wants to be a sending church. They want to support missionaries, but they don't necessarily want to send their own missionaries from their church. And so I've been wrestling with this issue for the last few years, trying to figure out how we can create this culture within churches to be not only supporting churches, but also sending churches. I think I have a few copies of this book over on our table in the Servant Center. If you want one, just help yourself. There's some other books there as well. Just if any of those are of interest to you, take them. And maybe that'll be of help to you to sort of frame your thinking about this. And so I've handed hundreds, maybe thousands of these out to pastors trying to stir the pot. But as I've wondered about why churches are not sending churches, obviously the scripture has something to say about that. And I want us to identify this morning three things that Romans chapter 10 maybe addresses that issue. And I am not here to criticize pastors. Pastors have an incredibly difficult task. And pastors are overwhelmed in their ministries. It's a tough thing to be a pastor of a church. And so this is not criticism at all. This is simply to say it is possible that within our congregations, within our churches, within our leadership, that maybe one of these reasons might fit us. And that might be the case for you this morning. And so let's take a look at Romans chapter 10. I'm going to just sort of briefly glance over the first couple of them and really zero in on the third one. The first problem that I see here in chapter 10, verse 1, is that it could be a heart issue. Look at verse 10, verse 1. Brethren, my heart's desire and prayer to God for Israel is that they might be saved. We lose a little bit here in the English translation because these are two very intense words. This word desire is actually the word covet. So when you covet something, there's some emotion, there's some passion, there's a real desire for something. So it's not just a passive thing that Paul is saying here. He says, I am coveting that God would bring my nationality to the Lord. The second word, prayer, is not just your generic one. This is actually pleading. I'm pleading to God. And so as Paul begins here, he says, this is my heart. Let me show you. I'm coveting. I'm pleading. I just can't stand it. And so missions is driven by people that have this kind of a heart's attitude towards God and towards the lost. Previously in Romans, Paul had put it this way, I could wish myself accursed and cut off from Christ for the sake of my brothers, my kinsmen, according to the flesh. That's an amazing statement. If I understand what Paul is getting at there, he's sort of implying, I'd give up my seat in heaven if I could get more people from Israel into heaven. That was a passion that flowed from his heart. I have to confess, I'm not sure I could say that. Am I willing to give up heaven for other people? But it was obviously something that drove Paul. And so was it any wonder there was a missions passion in the Apostle Paul when he says, I'm willing to go to that extent that I would give up my place in heaven for my kinsmen and for my brothers. And so perhaps one of the reasons we're not really as intense in missions as we could be is it could be a heart issue. And I don't want to castigate anybody or point to anybody. I'm just saying, if the shoe fits, let's wear it. The second issue is it could be a theological issue. Look at verse 2. For I bear them witness that they, that is the nation of Israel, have a zeal for God. But, not according to knowledge. For they, being ignorant of God's righteousness, seeking to establish their own righteousness, have submitted to the righteousness of God, have not submitted to the righteousness of God. People around the world have religious zeal. There are people of the other religions of the world that are far more zealous about their religion than we are of ours. So the zeal is there. But, he says, not according to knowledge. In other words, you don't have your facts straight. Your theology is not correct. And right here in verse 3, you have a watershed statement that the difference between the message of the gospel of Jesus Christ and Christianity and all the rest of the world's religions is found right there in verse 3. And that is simply this. All the world's religions are basically coming up with a system by which you can establish your own righteousness. God says you can't establish your own righteousness. You have to take on the righteousness of Christ. And that's a watershed issue. And if you want to sort out whether someone is right or wrong, true or false, a false religion or a right religion, it all boils down to verse 3. Are you trying to establish your own righteousness? Because basically, the world's religions and the cults are saying, if you do this, 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 and this, then you're going to be righteous before God. Then you're going to be right with him, and maybe you've got a chance of making it to heaven. And so this is a theological issue. And like we talked about last night, drawing a line in the sand, if you don't buy into that, John 14:6, if you don't believe that, then nothing else really matters, and you're in this camp over here. And so this is an issue, like I mentioned last night, that even evangelicals are debating today. Is it possible for us to establish in one way our own righteousness? Do all religions lead to God? But Jesus, let me remind you of our statement last night, said, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. So the question is, has that truth really gripped our hearts? Do we really believe that those people in far out lands are going to die and spend eternity away from God? Do we really believe that? So it could be a theological issue. If we're not passionate about missions, if we're not driven by this, if this is not the big deal of our life, then it possibly could be that our theology is not right. So maybe our heart isn't right, even though our theology is right, or maybe our heart's right, but our theology isn't right. Either one of those is going to be an obstacle to being involved in missions and passionate about sending missionaries from our church. The next few verses, right on down through about verse 12, I guess it would be, he sort of amplifies this idea, this theological issue. We won't take the time to look at that right now, but I want to go quickly to the third possible reason why we are not sending missionaries like we could. And it's simply a practical issue. This isn't complicated. There's nothing profound about this. It's really simple. I want you to think for just a moment about the imagery of dominoes. You've probably maybe not ever played dominoes. It is actually a game. But most of us, all we do with dominoes is we line them up and then push them over. And that's where the fun part is. And you know how dominoes work. You line them up. You could line 10,000 of them up. All you have to do is to push the first domino, and all the rest of them will fall. And finally, the very last one, the 10,000th one, will fall if you push the first one. Now, that's the imagery that is presented to us here in verse 14. There's a row of dominoes that he sets up. And he says, first of all, how will they call on him in whom they have not believed? Now, right before that, he had said, everyone who calls on the name of the Lord will be saved. So salvation comes because they call on him. But a domino has to fall to hit that one. And that is, how will they call upon him unless they have believed? The domino that hits that one is the next phrase. How are they to believe in him in whom they have not heard? You can't believe in something you've never heard of. But there's another domino that hits that one. And how are they to hear without someone preaching? So someone has to preach so that they could hear, so that they can believe. You see how the domino effect is going. But there is one domino at the beginning of this line that has to be pushed. And we may wonder why the rest of the dominoes are not falling. It's because we're possibly not pushing that first domino, because the first domino is, how are they to preach unless they are sent? It really is just that simple. We've got to send. And that may seem rather simplistic, but that probably is one of these problems that we are facing in church today, that we are not passionate and strategic and going for this idea of sending missionaries from our church. And we're satisfied to support missionaries from other churches, but we don't want to send any of our own. And we're happy to be engaged in missions, but we're not going to sacrifice our own kids and our own families and our own church members for the cause of Christ. But somebody has to put their finger on that first domino and push it if we're going to see this chain reaction taking place. Missions is not a subset of the many programs of the church. The Great Commission is the mission of the church. It's the umbrella over everything else. The reason why you do Sunday school or church or Awana or prayer meetings or anything else that you may do, whatever programs you come up with, all of that needs to be focused on accomplishing the mission. A while back, bought new tires for my car, and I got 90,000 miles out of my tires. And that's not because I'm a good driver. But I think the reason was because when I bought the car and bought the new tires for that car, I went to Firestone and I got a lifetime service for alignment. In other words, you pay one price, and for the rest of the time that you own the car, you can take it in. I could take it in every day. They'd have to align my wheels. And I didn't do that every day, but every time I'd change the oil, I'd take the car in and say, change the oil, and do an alignment, and they'd have to do it for free. And so I kept my tires in a line. They rotate in a line, and that's probably why I got those 90,000 miles out of those tires. That's a picture of what the local church is like. You know what it's like when your tires are out of a line. If they're like this, you're going down the road, you soon start wearing out those tires, and they start bouncing, and your steering wheel starts doing this when it's out of alignment. And that probably is a picture of what happens many times in churches. People are not aligned to the mission of the church. And everybody's got this agenda and that agenda, and they're trying to do this, and this program's important to them, and we're sort of down here and, you know, wandering around down here when we ought to be focused on the mission and aligning everything we do and everyone in the church towards this one thing, our compulsion for the Great Commission. And when you get the whole church aligned, things run a whole lot smoothly. And one of the reasons why we have church splits and the reason why we have church problems is because someone throws something in there as an alternate agenda to the Great Commission. And may I suggest to you that unless we are aligned with this thing called the Great Commission and do not see the church as an end to itself, we're going to have problems in the church. But it's a tremendous joy when you get the whole church aligned and say, you know what? The one thing that we're passionate about is that we're going to have to push some dominoes. We want people to be saved all over the planet. And that means that first and foremost, we're going to have to send somebody. Well, who is it that ultimately ought to be doing the sending? Who has potential of pushing that first domino? Who is it that really ought to be engaged in this thing that we call recruiting for missions? Now, a number of us are here as missions reps, and you would say, well, it's your job. I'd like to suggest to you three alternate ideas to having missions reps come and do recruiting. There are three groups of people or people that are really in this lineup of dominoes that have tremendous impact and influence over recruiting and missions. First is the family, and then the pastor, and then the church. Let me talk just briefly about each one of those. My father was a missionary in Nigeria. He graduated from Moody Bible Institute, went to Grace Bible Church, where Rosalie is from, and her home church, and that church took on all of his support and all of his outgoing expense money. So that was the extent of his deputation. Now, that's kind of the way it happened back then. It doesn't happen quite like that today, not too often at least. But he took off for the mission field, and he spent almost 50 years there as a missionary. He said one of the major influences, other than the call of God upon his life, was the fact that his dad loved missions. My grandfather was a Swedish immigrant. He'd come over here as a teenager. A farmer in South Dakota needed more farm hands, and so he paid for their voyage over by ship. And the deal was that my grandfather would work a number of years for him to pay off his passage. Well, he did that. He then married the farmer's daughter and went and started his own farm. And And he was a farmer for the rest of his life. But my grandfather was a godly man who loved missions. And so whenever missionaries would come to their church, and apparently that church had a lot of missionaries coming through, he would always beg them to come out to the farm and stay with them. And so sometimes they would just come out for the meal. Sometimes they'd come out for overnight. Sometimes they'd come out for several weeks. And these missionaries would spend time on the farm, hanging out with my grandfather, sometimes helping with the work on the farm. And in the evenings, there was really nothing else to do because they didn't have electricity or internet, television, nothing like that. You sat around the old big farm table and talked. And my dad said the thing that really got him moving towards missions was the fact that my grandfather desperately wanted his kids to be missionaries. And so he brought missionaries into his home and he had them tell these stories in the evening about what God was doing around the world. My dad caught a vision for missions and ended up on the mission field, and I ended up on the mission field. And God used my grandfather, probably never realized that my grandfather stood there poised with his finger on those rows of dominoes. And who knows how many other dominoes have fallen simply because there was a grandfather farmer that wanted to see the lost come to Christ around the world. Now, this is not intuitive. Parents and grandparents don't want to send their kids far away. We don't want that kind of separation. It doesn't make sense for us to want to send our kids away. And many would see this as a sacrifice. And it is, to a certain extent, some sacrifice in order to send your kids to the mission field or your grandkids to the mission field. But Jesus put it this way: whoever loves father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. And those are hard words to embrace. Whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me. And whoever does not take up his cross and follow me is not worthy of me. Whoever finds his life will lose it. And whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. He goes on to say in Mark, a similar passage, Jesus said, "Verily I say unto you, there is no man who hath left house or brethren, or sisters, or father, or mother, or wife, or children, or lands for my sake, and the gospel's, but that he shall receive 100-fold. There's a category of believers, and I realize it's kind of a popular saying, well, we're all missionaries. Well, yeah, we're all involved in the Great Commission, but there is a special category of Christian who does Mark 10:29. That leave father and mother and houses and lands. Call them what you want. Call them missionaries. Call them whatever you want. I don't care. But there are some special ops people in the Christian church. We've historically called them missionaries. So if everyone is a missionary, we need to come up with a different name for these kind of people, because not all of you are going to pack up your bags and leave father and mother and houses and lands, wife or children, for this gospel's sake. And I don't know what that's going to look like in your life, but there has to be, for the cause of the Great Commission, there has to be some people that do just that. Someone's going to have to be sent. Someone is going to have to be released from our congregation. And some parents and some grandparents are going to have to let go. And some churches are going to have to be willing to let go of their key leaders in order to do this thing that we call missions. But you know, God is not asking us to do something that he did not do himself. You know the verse. For God so loved the world that he gave who? His only begotten Son. And for parents to not be willing to give up our children flies in the face of the grace of God and his love and sacrifice for us. The future of missions is going to be fueled by parents who say it loud and clear and often that their aspiration is that their kids would do Great Commission work. It'll happen when parents model evangelism and discipleship. It'll happen because parents take their kids to visit the mission field. It'll happen because in the family devotion times, it's dominated by intercession for the peoples of the world and for the missionaries that their church supports. It'll happen when missionaries tell stories around the dinner table to wide-eyed kids who put aside their digital toys long enough to listen to the stories of God's grace and what God is doing around the world. It'll happen because parents stock the bookshelves and the video libraries of their home with missionary biographies. It'll happen when parents replace sports heroes with missionary heroes. It really comes back to the fact that as parents, you have tremendous potential to be involved in pushing dominoes. But one of the problems that we face is there are parents who are unwilling to let go of their kids. And I feel for some of you, your parents, you may be here against the wishes of your parents. They don't want you going into ministry. They want you doing something where you can earn a lot of money. And people come and join our organization. There's basically three categories. There's some whose parents are just kind of neutral. Well, this isn't our preference. We don't want to see you go, but okay. There are some people that are enthusiastic about it. Yeah, we want our kids to be missionaries. There are others that are saying, we don't want you to go at all. And it's heartbreaking. But you see, there is something about the Great Commission that is incumbent upon us that we don't really have the option to choose. This is something that God laid on us. And we have a responsibility before our Savior to fulfill the Great Commission. And some of you may end up on the mission field against the wishes of your parents. If you got parents that are fanning the flames and they're enthusiastic about you being here, you're privileged, and it's a joy to have that. But regardless of that, we can't excuse ourselves from the Great Commission, but just realize that as parents, you have the potential of pushing a domino, and maybe God isn't going to put you on the mission field somewhere. You're going to be a pastor of a church, or you're going to be involved in other ministries around the United States. There is something you can do, and you can be a recruiter for the next generation of missionaries. And your job as parents is to be leaning on that domino to see if you can push it, because ultimately you want to see people come to a saving faith in Jesus Christ. But all these dominoes have to fall in the meantime for that to happen. But you have the potential of putting your finger on that first domino and causing it to fall. The second person that has tremendous potential in recruiting is the pastor. This again is counterintuitive, because it doesn't make sense for a pastor to want to send off the best people in his church. Can you imagine what it must have been like that first Sunday in Acts chapter 13 after Paul and Barnabas left for the mission field? I mean, they just gave up their best theologian. They gave up one of their best givers and the guy that headed up the counseling. And all of a sudden, there's a vacuum there because they were willing to let go of Paul and Barnabas to the mission field. This is a painful thing. And we have to face and count the cost right up front, face the fact that this is not an easy thing for a pastor to be willing to participate in. In all of my thinking and talking with pastors, I think it really boils down to this one simple thing. And we can come up with strategies, and you can read my book and all the rest of that kind of stuff, but really, set it all aside. It really boils down, in my opinion, to this one thing. If a pastor wants it to happen, it probably will. In other words, it starts from the pulpit. If the pastor's heart is passionate towards the Great Commission, it'll just bleed out in the sermons, in his talk, in his actions, everything. And so the pastor, those of you that are going to be pastors, you hold the key oftentimes to whether your church is going to be a supporting church or a sending church. And just wanting it to happen is going to make a huge difference in the congregation. Last year, in trying to pursue this issue of why our church is not sending more missionaries, we did a series of, six or eight think tanks around the United States. We'd gather a group of pastors together, and we'd spend the day with them. And the major question that we kept coming back to and asking them was, why does your church not send missionaries? And we kept pounding on that subject. And I recorded all of their answers in all of these think tanks and compiled them all and distilled them down to about 10 reasons that they gave as to why they would not send missionaries. And thus, because of COVID, I had a bit more extra time because of not traveling. And I wrote this book, which is basically identifying those 10 reasons, not that I'm saying, but pastors said, this is the reason why we're not sending missionaries. And so this is not to criticize, again, pastors. This is simply to quote their words and say, this is the reason why we don't really do it. I rushed home from another trip and took off for here and forgot to bring any of these books with me, but maybe I'll try to get some to you somehow if you're interested. But basically, I just took these 10 reasons that pastors gave us as to why they did not train leaders and launch them forth. One of them was insecurity. Pastors feel that if they train people, they might find other people that can do it better than them. Other pastors said, well, to be quite honest, we're quite self-focused. We're building our own empire, and it doesn't make sense for us to take key leaders who are big givers and leading ministries in our church and saying, just let go of them. That's counterintuitive. And so they, in candid moments, they would say, you know, we are kind of self-focused. We're kind of inward looking. We're not outward looking. Others said they don't train leaders and send them because of their perfectionism. Because if you train someone else to do something, they're never going to do it as good as you. And their perfectionism, if you're a perfectionist, it's going to be hard for you to release ministry. But missionaries have to. And this is call of God upon us to start ministry, but to let it go. Why? Because other people need to do it. Others said they just don't really have time. And pastors are already overworked and have an incredibly difficult task in their leadership. And it's a challenging thing to be a pastor. And now to add on top of that, this idea of having as a major agenda to identify, to mentor, to disciple, to train leaders in your church, get them theologically educated, everything else that is needed to get them to the mission field. How do you add that on top of everything else you're doing? And the demands of the pastorate are incredible. And so quite candidly, there's the issue of time. There's also the issue of cost. There's a price to pay of letting go a key leader in your church. The church I attend in Atlanta, just this year we launched a missionary to the field. This man in his 20s was making $500,000 a year. So obviously, he was a key giver in our church. He's also very involved in a lot of things. I mean, he was just in everything, and our church was very dependent upon him. We just lost that guy. Not only did we lose his income that he was giving to the church, now we're supporting him. So it's a sort of a double whammy. There is a cost to letting go of your key leaders to go to the mission field. Other pastors said, we really have the wrong expectations. You know, our expectations are that the pastors are basically just supposed to preach and pray and that's it. Not launch missionary initiatives or not equip people to go to the mission field. Others said, well, we just don't have the vision for it. And their vision is pretty local. It's trying to reach their own neighborhood. And that's overwhelming in itself. But now to add a vision of trying to reach some country around the world and send somebody from our church to that place, that's a challenging thing. And so I worked down through these 10 issues. The church that I attend in, and I'm a member of in Atlanta, Lebanon Baptist Church, and one of the reasons we chose that church was because of the pastor. We have a pastor who has an open hand. It's kind of unusual, the spirit that I see in our pastor. We're going through a master planning exercise right now for our church. The building is about 20 years old, and we need to refresh some things and reorganize things and do a better job with where the kids' space is and all that kind of stuff. And so we're going through this master planning. But one of the things that we've deliberately said is we're not going to add to this building. We're not going to grow any bigger than we are. Why? Because we view ourselves as a revolving door, leading people to Christ, discipling them, training and mentoring them, and getting them equipped to send them out. And so we're not viewing our church as a place that's going to grow to some kind of mega. We are viewing ourselves as a place where we can process people through to the Great Commission initiatives of the world. Just this year, or maybe it was towards the end of last year, launched another church in Atlanta. And you say, well, why would you start another church in Atlanta, Georgia? You know, we got them all on practically every corner. Well, churches all go through life cycles, and some are dying as others are being birthed. But we targeted the Kennesaw State campus and the community right next to it. And our pastor invited the church planter to come in. He wasn't from our church, but he invited them to come into our church because we're about half hour away from there. And he said, recruit anybody you want from our church to go with you to help start that church. You know, not a lot of pastors would say, take anybody you want from my church. We have a missions conference and pastor will stand up and he'll say, one of our areas of interest is Utah. And we've support a good number of people out there in Utah and we have a lot of interest, and that's part of our vision is to try to reach people in Utah. And he'll stand up and tell people in our congregation, you need to move to Utah. You know, most pastors are trying to get people in, not get them out. But that's the spirit that we ought to have in our churches that is exemplified in my pastor. We're getting ready to send our youth pastor away, a key critical guy to our congregation. But we're sending him away over to Utah to plant a church. And so the spirit of the pastor, the heart of the pastor, can be the finger on the domino. And for those of you that are moving into pastorates, or those of you that are going back to maybe be assistant pastorates or whatever, try to infuse, without being critical, but try to infuse this enthusiasm and this vision for being a sending church. The leadership of the church has a lot to say and a lot to do whether the church will be a sending church. But then there's a third group of people that can press the first domino, and that's simply everybody in the church. In case we miss somebody, all of you ought to be recruiters. In Acts chapter 13, there's an interesting passage where Paul and Barnabas are being called or being sent from the church at Antioch. So Acts chapter 13 is kind of a pivotal chapter in the book of Acts, because from Acts chapter 13 on, you have Paul's missionary journeys, and you have a lot of the epistles being written from that context or from those journeys. And so Acts chapter 13 is really a hinge in the book of Acts. And in that hinge chapter at the very beginning, it talks about this church that was in the town of Antioch. They were meeting together, and the leadership team was there. And in that context, the Spirit says, "Set apart for me Barnabas and Saul for the work unto which I have called them." And it seems like by the grammatical structure of that sentence that the Spirit of God is not impressing upon the Apostle Paul and Barnabas to go to the mission field. He's communicating with somebody else. Maybe it's the leadership team, maybe it's the congregation, but it's a congregation that is involved in identifying who it is that should go to the mission field. And you can say, well, Paul already received his call sometime back, but at this point, this church was sensitive to what the Spirit of God was doing in his heart and his life. And they were saying, Paul and Barnabas, you need to go. So everybody in the church became recruiters. Wouldn't it be great if local churches would put all of us as recruiters out of business? We don't need to recruit anymore. Why? Because pastors are doing that. Churches are doing that. And we'd really like to get out of the recruiting business. Our job is simply to serve you as churches that want to send somebody from here to there. And we got some systems in place that we can help to make that happen. But it's the church that sends those missionaries, not the mission agency. You're the ones that need to do the recruiting. What would it be like if everybody in the congregation began to see themselves as a recruiter? They were doing what Jesus said. When you see the fields are white into harvest, pray that the Lord of the harvest would raise up workers. And everybody in your church was praying daily that God would raise up workers out of your congregation. And every Sunday you'd come together and you'd be asking, is it this guy? Is it her? Is it him? Is it this couple? Who is it that is the next missionary coming from our church? And that ought to be a question on every person's mind in the congregation. There is the next missionary there. They're sitting in the pews, but perhaps we have not created the vision and the passion and the strategy for that person to move from the pew to the mission field. But what if everybody in the church viewed themselves as a recruiter? What typically happens is this. Those of us who are from mission agencies, we come to a college like this and we talk to you about a place around the world and you get excited about it and you decide to join our agency and you come and go to candidate school and you start deputation and then you go back to your home church and you put out your hand and say, would you please write the check? Something's wrong in that picture where we've cut out the local church until kind of at the end of the story where they're supposed to write the check. From the very beginning, your church ought to be engaged in this process. You see, as you're here, if you're talking to one of us, your very next telephone call ought to be to your pastor and say, I'm really interested, but do you want to send me? Remember, the domino that has to be pushed is the ones about sending. It's not about going, it's about being sent. And until we have our churches that are proactively involved in recruiting and pushing that first domino and sending, we are not going to accomplish the Great Commission to the level that we potentially could. And as I travel around the states and I speak in multiple churches, many weekends of the year, every church I go into, if you're there for just a little while, you can see them. They're there. Typically, they're around 30 years old, maybe 40. And they're just sort of minding their own business. They've got their own career going. But these people are obviously called of God. And they could be missionaries. There is somebody in every congregation that could be that next missionary, but the church and the families and the pastor have to want to push that first domino. And so I share this with you today, hoping that maybe those of you who are going to be pastors in the future will view your ecclesiology this way. That others of you that are going to be good church members and maybe on missions committees, that you will flavor the church in that direction. That those of you that are going to be missionaries, that you go through this flow of your local church and not just through a mission agency. So I hope there's application here that grabs your attention here today. But I believe that we have incredible potential in the future. And one of the dynamics of missions today is this. There's probably 6 or 8 Bible colleges that we used to recruit at that have gone out of business. Appalachian is one of the few standing yet that still believe in missions and are pushing hard on missions. And we've lost the recruiting pool as a mission agencies. But I'm not pessimistic about that. There are tens of thousands of people sitting in the pews of our churches that if we would mobilize, you wouldn't have space to contain them here at Appalachian Bible College. But we're going to have to become proactive at a local church level to make that happen. And so my challenge to you today is for you to join the ranks of missionary recruiters. Maybe some of us, you know, at the back of the room can be of help, give you some hints, but you ought to be involved in recruiting. Father, I pray that you would indeed, out of this group, raise up many that would head to the mission fields of the world, but Lord, you'd also cause each one of their churches to pivot and become sending churches in addition to being supporting churches. Bless, I pray, your word to our hearts. Impact us with it. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.